Hey, what's going on, family? This is your boy, Brother Technico. My mic has been having issues, so sorry if the audio quality isn't quite what I would like it to be. But we have to talk about this affirmative action ruling. Hot take. I know I haven't done one of these in a while, but we kind of have to talk about this because this kind of sets a resets a really, really bad precedent. And the precedent is that these Ivy League schools like Harvard and Yale and whatever, so on and so forth, don't have to accept a qualified individual that is black or brown and so on and so forth, right? They don't have to do that. You know, the spirit of affirmative action was done in all aspects. Let's talk about that really, really quickly. Why we had any kind of affirmative action in the first place? Well, we were in a racist society that was gatekeeping benefit certain positions, going to certain schools, education, so on and so forth, et cetera, from folks who were non-white. What makes this case so egregious, and I know a lot of people want to focus on this whole Asian thing, you have to realize that buffers are going to do what buffers do, right? And in the context of court, anyone can come up with a case. Anyone can argue anything. It's up to those Supreme Court, or in this case, the Supreme Court judges, but in generally, it's up to the judge. It's up to the court, the judicial system, to decide on whether or not whatever this person is bringing is valid. Now, one of the arguments in this particular Supreme Court case is that this Asian man wasn't accepted into Harvard. Even though he had really, really high SAT scores, although it's said that they don't even base their admissions off SAT scores. He also said that affirmative action was keeping people like himself away from having a rightful position because they were maintaining spots for these black and brown people. Although, if you look at the statistics, Asian people get in far more than any other minority group, quote unquote minority group. Another thing is that it's always funny, and this is how you can tell that this is a buffer action, is that overwhelmingly, Asians are accepted into these schools more than anyone else. This whole model minority thing, which they've tried to wash away with the hate bill and some of this media that they put out there that kind of like roughly talk about it. This stuff is still in play. Now, that doesn't mean that all Asians are bad. That doesn't mean that everyone feels this way. But I talked about this a few years ago, family, that when they were bringing up affirmative action in Los Angeles schools with private schools, the Asian community, the older Asian community in particular, had an issue with that. And let's be really, really real. The reality is that it's not about Asians getting in or out. It's about your black ass getting in. Because no one questions, none of these people, not this dude that going up to the Supreme Court, questions that what was it, 58% of white students who go in there, and some of them get go in there just because their parents are alumni. Like there, some of them aren't even qualified. When you talk about like one of our presidents, George Bush, this dude had a C average. He went to an Ivy League school. So when you're start talking, when you're talking about who deserves entry or admission, why don't you go talk about those people who get, for lack of a better phrase, grandfathered in, who they just bring in? That's the pre those are the people that you should have an issue with, not the other people that are qualified, because that's one of the issues that you have with affirmative action. The way that people who are against it will describe it, they describe it as someone holding a spot for someone that's a minority. Just for the sake of them being a minority. That's not the case. You still have to be qualified. The reason that affirmative action was here in the first place is because we come from and I'm not just with a college, just in general, is that we come from this was a racist society, still is, and it gatekeeps education, benefits, money, all kinds of things from people who are non-white. Now, going back to the model minority things, we know there's a once upon a time they did not care for Asians. It was Fu Manchu and all this other kind of stuff, the internment camps. We know the history, right? And it still goes on to this day. Like, you know, they still have some hatred, right? So most people know this from what some of what we call the alt-right say, but It was never intended, affirmative action. It was never intended to just be something where you just grandfather people in there. The issue was that people were qualified. People were intelligent enough. People were, in most cases or some cases, more qualified than some of the people they were accepting to come in, and they were being denied. That's the part that's unfair. Why doesn't that dude have an issue with all these other people who are unqualified? But that's kind of where the bias comes in, the prejudice comes in. Because rather than look at the people who are truly getting away like a fat rat, you want to go pick at the other, because let's be real, they don't want to see them there. There is no love there. You know, it's something that we don't talk about in the society. And well, we should. We should talk about the prejudice and the discrimination that Asians have against particularly black folks. And a lot of them, when they come here, they have these preconceived notions about who we are. And let's even throw this out there too, because this plays a part in it. When you look at Asian culture, they don't like the concept of foreigners. They already have this bias against people who are not like them, and it even extends to other Asian countries. There's like when you go to Korea, there's a bias they have against Japanese. There's a bias that they have against Chinese, and it's the same way across the board. Now, some of this is influenced by history. You know, especially when you start thinking about Chinese and Japanese relations, you go to the history or the story of Nanking, right? That whole thing that went down. So it's not completely without merit, but we should talk about like, hey, these like people come here with these notions. When you watch certain things about how people from like how like for example, Japanese people feel about black people, it's influenced by media. They think that we're cool because we like hip hop and we're perceived as strong. All this other kind of stuff that really has nothing to do with black culture, but it's like it's everything they see on TV. It's everything that they listen to. Okay, when they come here with these preconceived notions, and now you're living in American society where you're getting force-fed racism, racism, blah blah blah, da 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 da. It's very, very easy. See, it's different. Because when you're talking about quote unquote black and brown folks, let's be real. Like, there's white Latinos, there's black Latinos. The Latinos that they don't like are the brown ones, the ones that are closer to black. Those are the ones that they don't like. There's a lot of white Latinos in this society, and a lot of them can pass. A lot of them that pass are from Texas. It goes with the history. Right? Go to the Treaty of Guadalupe. They never honored it. You had all these women in ranches, or you had wealthy women. And it was said, you guys can go look this up. This is not what I'm saying. This is history. There was a point where they felt like a poor white man can make his fortune in Texas because all he had to do was marry a Mexican woman living in Texas who was wealthy. And that's what happened. We can even go back a little bit further and go into Latin America and go deal with the fact that when Europeans got there, there was no, first of all, there was no huge melting pot. Okay, everything over there is based off of hyper descent, right? The more white blood you have, the higher ranks you are. They actually separated people like that. When the Europeans came, there was no day where they said, okay, we came here, we screwed over the indigenous folks, we brought slaves, and then we just left. No, they remained in power. There's a little document that's called Mejora de la Raza, for the betterment of the race. It's a document that talks about the positioning of white folks or white Latinos versus the mulatto Latinos, or the mixed, the ones that are kind of in between, and then the negros, the blacks, right? So that's a whole nother convoluted thing within itself. But to be really, really honest, when you're talking about white Latinos, that's not who the Asians are talking about. Like, Asians, if you look at couples, if you see different things like that, no, they actually deal with each other. They actually do. Who they're not dealing with are the Latinos that look like me. So that's the problem. So going back to this case, it just kind of screams Make America Great Again. And I've been telling people that's what this country has been on. Like, you thought it ended with Trump. No, this shit has been continuing because they have a fear. When you listen to what Biden said about how black folks ought to get along with Latinos because they're going to outnumber us, like, it's always a thing about numbers, right? And right now, they're really, really concerned about the shift of power. And again, that's why you're starting to have more things like this. This is why you're starting to see them elevate certain mulattoes or certain mixed groups higher than others. If you look at the history of what it was in Latin America, this was the same thing. As soon as they, and it actually was always that case, where they were greatly outnumbered by the others. So that's why they had to have a system where the more white blood you have, the higher up you are, because you couldn't have everyone be against you. The numbers just didn't support it, right? In the United States, where you have hypo descent, it was very different. The population of whites versus all the others was great. That's how you can have all these lynch mobs and all these different groups, because the numbers support that kind of behavior. Although there was a lot of rebellions, there's a good book called, by Hubert Aptheker, Dr. Hubert Aptheker, called Slave Revolts. So if you thought that Nat Turner was the only significant rebellion, you will find that his was just a gleam, a glitter, amongst a sea of a bunch of rebellions. Over 250, if I'm not mistaken, either 150 or 250. But yeah, so that's kind of where we're at. They want their country. They want America to be great again. They're feeling the loss of control, all the things that they felt like they've had to give up, and they're very slowly trying to peel it all back. That's what they're doing. It's the same thing when we sold most of our black businesses, and they were replaced with all these commercial entities. Now there's no mom and pop's place where you go get your little burgers and fries and different things like that. It's a McDonald's, Jack in the Box, so on and so forth. It's one of their institutions. There's no more mom and pop's place where you can go work and have a job. You have to go through these people now. And when you go through these people, it's hard for you to make enough money to pay your rent or put food on the table. So slowly but surely, they've been taking back what they felt like they lost. And this affirmative action thing is just another example of that. Yeah, they're going to use, see, because that's what it's all about. You have to understand that you have to have the buffers getting into it with each other. You can never focus on the dominant group. You got to have the buffers fighting with each other. Right? Because as long as no one's paying attention to what they are doing, they can get away with shit like a fat rat. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to kill, capture, or you know what I'm saying? A fucking rat. Rats are, they can get away. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I watch these rats in the White House every day. But in all seriousness, like, that's, all joking aside, that's exactly what this is. Okay, and we haven't paid attention. It's too easy to use the optics, and they realize it's very easy to do that. That was the whole FBA versus African thing. That's why I don't really deal with the other dude whose name I've said far too many times on my own platform to where that shouldn't be the case. But that's why I'm very, very suspect of that, because it's just the buffers fighting each other for nothing. For nothing. Fighting over crumbs. But that's how the society has survived. That's how it will continue to survive for the time being. Because the other thing people have to realize is that a lot of these moves that they're making are moves out of desperation. Their international clout isn't quite what it was. A lot of people are pulling away, and you're dealing with a country that's in fear. It's in chaos, too, for that matter. Everything is kind of going to shit. I talked about this years ago. Like, if you want to pick out a society that's failing or dying, look at how they treat their old people, their young, and education, like libraries and stuff like that. Education has gotten piss poor. it's at a point to where they're li we were literally talking about taking history out to make people feel better. Let's take slavery out and civil rights out to make people feel better. Oh, nobody thought about taking slavery out. Because no one tells you the real, like, you got to go to college to really learn a decent amount. And anything else, when you want to be like proficient at it, you have to do, outside study. But you learn a lot more in college about slavery than you ever do in high school, right? They don't tell you the parts of the rebellion. They don't tell you like the inventions or anything that's like positive. They give you all the bullshit. They give you, yeah, we made you niggas work. Beat the shit out of you. You guys didn't like it. Abraham Lincoln freed you. He didn't. And yeah, that's it. That don't make Pete, that didn't make us feel good when you tell us that we didn't come from shit. That we don't have, like, you, when you go to high school, you learn about like ancient, Chinese societies from a certain point, Greek societies. They'll touch on Egypt for like a little bit, but they don't want us looking at that too deeply. And then boom, black people, well, in 900 AD, you guys started doing artwork and masks. Y'all didn't know nothing about a wheel. That's also false. But this is, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Like, nobody cared about how that fucked up ass history made us feel. But in turn, but this is what it is. I'm not even gonna go on this for too long. This is a hot take. But that's what it is, family. That's exactly what it is. It's bullshit. It's complete bullshit. It's complete bullshit. However, we have allowed this to happen. We've allowed this to happen because we've taken our foot off the gas pedal. We've allowed this to happen because we've put our faith into figureheads and not into real actionable goals. The thing that made Malcolm X great, Martin Luther King great, even our scholars, John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, were the people that supported them. They wouldn't have been shit without them. But that's the other issue. We get fed this messianic way of overcoming where you have to go rely on a leader. And that's how they tell his that's how Western society tells history. You know what I'm saying? When something happens, it's because this great person did it. It's not because all these other factors, like when people win a war, hey, it's because of this general that led the battalion. What about the people that was getting down? The general shot everybody? He bad like that? No, but that's how we choose to tell history, and you see where the damage is, or where the potential damage can be. Because people start to expect, oh, that's how we have to wait on a savior, a Jesus, to come rescue us from our situation, and we don't put the work in. Why was civil rights so, and Black Power started before civil rights, and that was a successful move. It started in like I would say the late 40s. Because you're starting to deal in a lot of, a lot of sisters. Maybe even you want to go even before that, because you had, Ida B. Wells, her organization. You had Marcus Garvey and his organization, and that's even going back to the early 1900s, late 1800s, right, 1890s. So, maybe even, before then. But it's the work. That's the point. It was the work. People were getting out there. No matter how you feel about Frederick Douglass and the freedom fighters or all that kind of stuff, no matter how you feel about Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman, she was a war, she put in work. They were doing stuff, and it wasn't just her. Like, she was well known and deservedly so. She did a lot of things. There's a lot of people who give testimony, her instincts, her spirituality. There's a whole lot of great things about Harriet Tubman, especially on what she came from. But she joined a group of people. She was not alone. But again, that's what they focus on, so that's what we focus on. We heard about Rosa Parks. We don't hear about all those other women that met up to go talk about the boycotts. Bus boycotts that lasted over a year. Three, I, what was it? 386, 387 days or something, something to that effect, right? Talking about a little over a year. Rosa Parks didn't organize that. She just happened to be the light-skinned, and I have to throw that out there because that's a part of it, right? She happened to be the light-skinned woman that they put up there on a pedestal. She became that movement, even though if it was just her and like four other sisters, it wouldn't have mattered. You wouldn't have hurt the bus system that much. And but when you do that, when you highlight the Rosa Parks and not the whole group, you take out the significance of the work, the sacrifice. People were helping each other cook, they were carpooling. It wasn't easy, it wasn't convenient. That gets me to my other problem, my other issue. When people get into this messianic thing, it's like we think that overcoming or getting through stuff should be convenient. We think that like activism is convenient, like you're fighting for something. Oh, it's supposed to be easy. You're supposed to be comfortable. No, in what world? In what world is that, has that ever been true? No, when you got to fight against something, it's never comfortable. Your enemy's not going to make it convenient for you to fight against them. So what are we doing? Honestly, family. I'm talking about collectively, because I know there's a lot of black groups out there that's doing their due diligence. You know, I still got my thing coming along, but we got people out there doing their due diligence, but that doesn't speak to the whole. And you can tell just by how people respond to it, and that's another thing that we got to deal with. How we respond. Getting on Twitter, talking, airing out our grievances, that accomplishes nothing. Family, you have to realize that it accomplishes nothing. It just lets your enemy know how upset you are. How upset you are, but how unwilling you are to really do anything about it. When people are talking, that's not when you worry. You don't worry when people are talking. A lot of people talk. What are you gonna do about it? One thing that I liked of that crazy, heinous movement by the alt-right, and they do exist, like, we have to understand that there's levels to this shit, right? But one thing I did like is that they went with this notion of the silent majority. Like, you know, like, let's move in silence, like, what, like, killers are supposed to. Because that's the mindset that you need to adopt. Nah, we ain't gonna do that. We're gonna tell them everything. Like, how about this? Instead of telling them, hey, politician, you know, we ain't gonna give you our vote. Why don't we just, like, you know, get on social media, talk about gathering, talk about what we're gonna do, and then we make agreement with each other not to vote for these politicians. Don't tell them shit. Don't let the Roland Martins or any of these people know. Let them think what they want to think. Let them think that they still got us the way that they want us. You see, when people complain when you have no power. That's why we complain the way that we do. We need to find some power. We need to find some strength. We need to get beyond this our comfort zones, because no, you're not going to be comfortable. And that's what it takes. I'll give you an example. Ice Cube just did a podcast the other day, or not, kind of talking about how he felt, or how they've been pretty much bothering him ever since he came out with that contract for the Business for Black America. Because you don't see it, you don't see Big Three on TV anymore like you used to. You gotta go, I gotta find it on YouTube when I wanna watch it, because I support it. You know, he is the first official black professional sports league, you know, that's around right now. And sure, he's already made his money. But he didn't have to do that. He don't have to deal with the bullshit. And I'm sure they fuck with him in ways that he don't even want to talk about. But it is what it is. You know, you're not going to be comfortable. We got to get out of that. I'm not telling you to go broke or to lose your job, but maybe you need to start thinking of other ways, other means to make money. Maybe that's what we have to do. All these skilled black individuals that work in so many different industries, well, it's time for us to have some confidence and start up our own companies. You know? Make our own cybersecurity teams, make our own law firms and banks and different things of that nature. We're capable. Well, it takes a little bit of time, sure, but if we all got on board, and that's, oh my God, it's such a, that just, if we all got, because that's what it seems like, what we always say, if we, damn, if we cared enough about our own fucking freedom, our own fucking happiness, we wouldn't have to keep begging for this shit, begging for us to get together and do some shit. No, the issue is that you, collectively, I'm not talking about certain black folks individually. Collectively, we don't have the confidence as a people to do shit by ourselves. And we need to get it. We need to find that. We need to get that from somewhere. You don't have the confidence. And that's the problem. That's the problem with it. Like NBA players are so silly. So silly. And I'm gonna tell you what. We can't do what they do. Why not? Y'all make enough money, you can buy a gym. You got all the talent. You see what Ice Cube was able to do. You mean to tell me a bunch of NBA players can't pull their money together and have more money than Ice Cube to get something cracking? To see the kind of game that they would like to see? To get the kind of treatment that they would like to get? Especially when you talk about basketball. NFL, no, that's going to be, no, you ain't changing the NFL. You're not changing baseball. You know, but what we do, what we can have control over, we need to go for it. But it's the collective confidence. All you hear is, well, oh, we can't. How? Ooh. Pathetic. But that's okay, because it's just like, and I really don't mean this to be demeaning, but I mean, we're talking about athletes who, you know, they're not thinking about none of this shit. That's why I don't like it when athletes get put to the forefront in terms of like talking about political issues, race issue, things that are going on. Like, what made them a subject matter expert anyway? They just some highly paid black people. What's the point? What's the point? Like, why do we go to them? Why do we go to rappers? Why was Biden going to Cardi B or Charlamagne? You know, maybe I can understand Charlamagne from the context of, you know, let me get on a platform that I know that, you know, black people follow. You know, this has, you know, black engagement on this platform is high. I want to engage with black folks. Let me get on this platform. Cardi B? Nah, man. Nah. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Especially when you have a lot of black people who are in the politics, that are in the government, who have experience, who have the knowledge to have those kinds of conversations. It's disrespectful. I've always thought it was disrespectful, because I'm like, you don't do this for anyone else. You don't ask Lady Gaga how she feels about A, B, C, or D, right? You don't go ask Joe Rogan, great, you know, great show. But you don't go ask him these kinds of silly questions. And he has opinion, shit. Maybe they should ask him, but still, but you wouldn't even think of it, because who is Joe Rogan in the scope of like politics? Like, why would his opinion matter? I'm not saying that some of the things that he says don't make sense. I don't particularly like the guy. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not saying that some of the things that he says don't make sense. You know, but you don't go to him because he's not what you would ex that's not who you expect to get that kind of knowledge from. That's not, you know what I mean? But yet they do it with our community. They don't do it to any other community. Nobody went around with asking what's his name? What's his name? Well, now he's in the politics, so it would be valid. But before Manny Pacquiao was in the politics, they weren't asking him nothing about that. They don't ask George Lopez those kinds of questions. No, because they have people that are into politics that they can ask that can represent the Latino community or the Mexican community or the Filipino community. They have that. So it's a farce, and I know I kind of went on a tangent there because this was about the whole affirmative action thing. But these are things that we really got to think about. You know what I'm saying? Because it feels like we're just waiting around to get pushed around, and instead of taking action, we just complain. Groups are taking action against us, you know, and whites, you know, white supremacy is rewarding them. Is rewarding them for it. And our response is to get on Twitter, to get on Instagram, to get on YouTube and air out our grievances. It's not to come up with something, to come up with solutions, to all meet up. I like the fact that we could all meet up for a rally for reparations, but let's get together for a rally for something else, a rally to start these black businesses to get us working so our youth can either go straight from high school into a working position, start making some good money, or coming from college, whatever the situation is. We're not talking about that. That's what I would like to see. It's getting on there and okay, yeah, all right, yeah, this shit is real fucked up, y'all. This shit is real fucked up, family. So this is what we gonna do. I'm gonna host a master class on how you can do this and get your yoni energy right, and for the men you get your masculine energy right, and you know your your henna new gonna be on point. I'm telling you, we're gonna talk about how you can get some of this bread. You know, just you know, we're gonna get out of this situation, y'all. Just join my master class. And I'm not hating on everybody's master class. There are some good programs out there. You know, I think I talked about this again. Another thing I talked about a while ago is that when I went to go see the screening for Happy, and I'm you know I got a chance to see and even meet you know Professor James Smalls, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, and Dr. Wade Nobles. You know, even though they had the screening for that, you know, the first day, when I come to find out, because this wasn't even in that, and it should have been there. They should have made that. No, I don't know if they were trying to keep it low key or what. But they had a workshop for like job creation to help people like get their shit together, like you know, kind of like do an assessment of like where you're at and kind of some of the things you can do. Like, I like stuff like that, like, you know what I mean? But a lot of these workshops, family, or the things that they out there talking about, like, if it's not talking about how to improve your business or kind of get yourself to a certain point, you know, so we can kind of do some of these other things, and it's about, you know, keeping, like, I don't give a fuck at this point. I don't, like, it's not about keeping your spouse happy. Yeah, that's a, but that's not the main goals. Okay, definitely do that, but this is not the time to be taking master classes for. Okay, we need master classes for other things. Ass ain't gonna get us out this situation. Okay, it's just not. It's just not. You know, if the argument is, you know, we got to be able to like deal with ourselves, our, you know, our internal, you know, our immediate families first, and having that on lock so we can actually deal with each other healthily as a community. Okay, I get that, but time's a ticking. And like I said before, like, it's never going to be convenient for you to rebel against your oppressor. It's just not going to happen. Convenience is not a part of the equation. And I feel that, again, people want to find shit that fits them, that fits their you know, they want to find that one size fits all. Like, no, I need an option that works with me, works with my schedule, works with my job. That was one of those things I was telling my mom all the time. I'm just like, you can't do both. There has to become a place and point in time where you realize that you're not going to change this system that you work for, because the system that you work for is designed to work this way. There is a level of sacrifice that's necessary. You know, a lot of our great leaders, it's so funny. A lot of the people who've made, like, you know, we love Malcolm X, but we don't want to sacrifice how Malcolm X sacrificed. And I'm not even talking about just how he was killed and sacrificed his literal life. I'm talking about how he sacrificed his time, you know, his career. You don't think that man couldn't have been making money doing other stuff? Like, he wasn't smart enough to do other things? He could have gotten by in this society. You know, all this stuff that they put on YouTube about him being a hustler and this and that is oversold. His auntie was a somebody. He had a good education. He could have been he could have done just fine and not bothered with this corruption, which people understand is like, well, people can understand because, you know, people can like they like to look back and say, well, yeah, that was a fucked up time. But imagine, you know what I'm saying, being in living in that time, like everybody was still reacting the way that they do today. Why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? Blah blah blah. But it takes that kind of sacrifice. Time away from his family, time away from his kids. A lot of us love to talk about John Henry Clark. You know, we love to talk about Professor Ben. Those guys sacrificed. They gave it all. But Dr. Ben, like, he died poor. A lot of these guys died poor. So you can have a future. So you could have an education. We talk about it all the time, the way that our ancestors sacrificed. It's a bunch of sacrifice. That's what it takes. But very similarly to the original black, like the first black people who benefited from affirmative action and turned around and spoke against it, you've taken the shit for granted. And I guess only when it's stripped away from you once again and you realize what life is like without it, will you appreciate it. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe every generation needs to fight. They need to get out of a certain situation because they don't appreciate it. John G. Jackson died in an old folks' home, unmarried. Dedicated to the work. Where are the revolutionaries that make it, you know, that make it out with millions of dollars and got a fat crib and a fat pad? You better start really asking yourself. And I'm not saying that you can't live comfortable or that you can't live well, but you really have to start asking yourself those kinds of questions. Going back to the Ice Cube thing. They won't even put the Big Three League on TV anymore. They're doing everything in their power to push that to the side. But I bet you if he would have got on with what their program was, they wouldn't have had an issue. I bet you he could have made a whole lot more money with people not bothering him. And that's why he was talking about what he was talking about the other day. And he's going to do more speaking about what's been happening behind the scenes. And family, you got to ask yourselves, why? Because he's making, you know, no, because he's willing to make a sacrifice for the greater good. He's not looking at himself, and that's a problem. It's a problem I have in my family. You know, they can't see the big picture. That's why we're always getting into it. People don't understand about what I'm trying to build, the nonprofit that I'm trying to set up, you know, why my focus has been on STEM, why I've also not been making as many podcasts, because for me to create a curriculum that's going to help us, like I'm at it. I gotta study. I gotta put the same amount of effort that I put in learning all the other stuff into this. Like, ain't no half stepping. Ain't no half stepping. But like it's crazy, like people were like having and but you have to want to do it. So let me just say that, because I'm not gonna say that like as if I'm fucking upset that that's what it is, because I wouldn't want to do anything else. Like, you have to have a passion for it. But I could have lived a much different life. I could have been in law enforcement, been high ranking, but had my life set. Could have done a lot of different things. But I recognize something in my community, some low-hanging fruit. And there's other things. Like, my nonprofit is not just about STEM. And for those who know me, know I've had a run at trying to do something like this in the past. You know, you learn more though, right? But I could have did anything. But my community, wanting to see them do better, see them thrive. You know, I'm tired of all these fucked up ass stories that I gotta see and deal with all the time. People losing hope. People who are qualified never getting the opportunity. People coming from these fucked up ass situations to where it's just like you're People who have a good have no idea how people are literally throw, like there's so many people out there that are that are put in positions to fail. To fail. You know, and not everybody can be a Tyler Perry, live in a car, and it sounds nice. It sounds nice when you hear those stories of getting through situations, and I applaud them. I'm not disrespecting those stories whatsoever, but everybody can't be like that. Not everybody can be a billion-dollar fucking director, a multi-million-dollar athlete. There's limitations. Okay, there's only so many spots on the team. So not everybody can do that. But if it like if this country was as great as it's supposed to be, not like everybody should have a fucking opportunity. Then yeah, I'm looking out for my community first, 'cause shit, it's what you do, and I have no problem with that. If Asian community should look after their community, Jewish community should look after their community, like put your communities first. That there's nothing wrong with that. I actually think it's a problem when you expect other people to care about your community more than you do. I think that's a problem. And while we're on the subject of communities, I don't fucking hate communities. My nonprofit was focused on things like community gardens that was for everyone in the community, understanding what a community is and that communities aren't homogenous. And that if I'm only allowing one part of the community to eat and get this food, that's going to create problems because you got other people in the community not eating. I understand that, but at the same time, I also understand that the black community has a special need for education, a special need for workshops, a special need for STEM. There's certain things that they don't have that they need. So, yeah, I want to focus on that. And this is what we need to be focusing on as a community. Oh, this hot take is taking longer than I thought, but it's okay. It's okay. Because this needs to come out. This needs to come out. Because I just seen a video. I'm going to talk about this. I know I went on a tangent, but I'm going to talk about this. What I saw. You guys can go, you know, you guys got my social medias. You can see what I said on Twitter. Or not, was it Twitter? No, it was Instagram shit. Cause, like family, y'all know I don't really be on social media like that. That's why I haven't really been dropping the tags. Been more focused on this. But I did hop on Instagram today. I saw a video, and sometimes I hop on. I rarely do anything, but this one kind of, I don't want to say it irked me, but it caught my attention, right? Because it was about a brother. He's clearly at work. He has a uniform on, and you know, a female police officer is, you know, questioning him, and he's just like, "Oh my God, suspicion is not a crime. The fact that you suspect me is not a crime." And I'm just sitting there, and I had to say, and I'd end up doing a video on this. I'm like, well, actually it is. If you look at the precedent, and I guess where this relates, we're talking about Supreme Court precedents, and I had a message about like challenging Supreme Court precedents, terrible precedents that are set by them. Graham versus Connor. Graham versus Connor, a lot, and I got a whole, and if you guys don't know what this is, I have a whole podcast on that. So go check it out. But Graham v. Connor, just as a brief synopsis, is basically police officers do have the right to either arrest you, to approach you, to damn near do anything as long as they're within, as long as they have reasonable suspicion. When you look at a lot of these major court cases, like the what's his name? George Floyd, yeah, a bunch of these cases, whether it's Oscar Grant, George Floyd, all these things, the number one defense, and Google it. Don't believe a damn word I say. Verify everything I've said for yourself. For yourself. And I also dare you to challenge. Some of you guys do message me sometimes. Sometimes you guys give me ideas for episodes, and I'll implement those pretty soon. Just been busy. But still, stay focused, Nick. The whole thing is like, yo. Reasonable suspicion. That's an MF, dude. So no matter what, like, and all these top cases, they're talking about reasonable suspicion because Oh man, sorry about that, y'all. I kind of lost my train of thought. That's what happens with hot takes. But no dead air. No dead air. No dead air. No editing. This ain't a YouTube video. So you guys ever noticed that if I had something that sounded real like it's been a minute. Anyway, let's get back on task. So the reason why reasonable suspicion and Graham v. Conner comes up is because it gives them that right. They put police officers on a level above, because of their training, above, what a regular person is. But we know that people have what we call implicit bias. So something like reasonable suspicion, when people already have implicit bias about, let's say about black people, let's say they already think that they're thugs or this or that, or, they're wearing a hoodie. Let's not forget Trayvon Martin. He was wearing a hoodie. He was wearing a hoodie. No, he was wearing a hoodie. He could have been a thug. That all go ties into the same thing. And while we still talk about Terry Frisk, because for whatever fucking reason, Graham versus Connor is a bigger Supreme Court precedent that we need to overturn. Like, that precedent that's been set by that has done nothing but cause us issues. Yet, I haven't heard any of your favorite social media influencers or whoever you go to talk about this in relationship to these situations. I doubt that we're going to have people challenging our community, as although we should, the Supreme Court decision that was just made today in regards to affirmative action. We need to challenge that terrible precedent that was made by Salinas that took away the Miranda. I just saw somebody talking about Miranda, and they don't ha and it's like that shit has been overturned. That shit has been overturned for damn near 30 years. I believe the Salinas case was in the 90s, early 90s. So that whole thing about no, they have to read my rights or this, you know what I mean? Or no, that shit don't fly. Because a precedent was set. Go look it up. Go look at Salinas and v. Houston. I believe that's what it's called. Go look at that. Family. These are the moments where I'm just like, what the fuck are we doing? That's why I talk like that's why I have no problem giving individuals their flowers. I see what certain people are doing, but as a collective, as a group, we gave more of a fuck about Tory Lanez and Megan Thee Stallion than about this. If we would have spent as much time focusing on Graham versus Connor than we did Megan Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez, shit, we might be actually somewhere. And y'all think y'all better than them slaves that was on the plantation. Huh. Them slaves on the plantation had more heart than you. Go look at that book I told you about, Dr. Aptheker, Slave Revolts. Abraham Lincoln didn't end slavery. No, slavery had to end because, first of all, it cost too much fucking money. They had to ban slavery in the 1820s because of the importing of slaves, because they were just like, okay, these slaves that are coming from these other places, they're wild. They keep fighting back. We need to stop bringing them in. Because what they're doing is they're starting to give the other slaves ideas, okay? And we don't want them having that. No, stop importing them. And guess what happened? Those ideas kept manifesting because you can't keep treating people a certain way and expect them not to do anything. And that's what they figured out. They said, you know what? It's easier to catch a fly with honey. So rather than beating them upside the head, why don't we, give them just enough? Give them a little bit. Smack them upside the head, and but then give them a treat and say we're sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean that. I'm gonna do better. I'll do better. Like y'all, for the sisters out there, I'm sorry, but y'all have been in a relationship, a fucked up ass relationship. Dude want to go upside your head, he beating your ass. It's unfortunate how like common that is too. Like I'm tired of hearing them stories. I'm tired of it, but it is what it is. But you always got them people, oh man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I love you. I'm gonna do better. I'll be a change. I die. You want to know why you fall for that, sisters? It's because this is how this is how your society has been treating you. You have been trained to accept that kind of response. You have been trained to accept trauma bonding. Some people want to call it Stockholm syndrome. I just call it trauma bonding. You in a jacked up, you got a fucked up love relationship with somebody who beat the shit out of you. But it's okay. Hey, they said they gonna do better. They said they didn't mean it. I know they truly deep down they love me. They just gotta get past a few flaws. Just a few flaws. But if we talk about it and if we work through it, it'll get better. Shit. Family, that's one reason why I'm not on social media like that anymore, if it hasn't been clear, because I don't see the point in going on social media to air out grievances. You know, I would rather go on there to distribute information, you know, but there are more effective ways to distribute information these days, you know, than trying to please these social media algorithms. My God. These things try to really keep you in a box, but I don't see the point. There's no point in airing out your grievances. There's no point in getting on YouTube and talking about the ratchet syndrome. How is we black people going to make it through white supremacy and we still being ratchet and we want to twerk? What the fuck? What does that do? What does that accomplish? Oh, you say you're spreading awareness. Okay, so what's the next step? Okay, you've established the awareness. So what's the next step? That's the other. That's like I'm tired of that aspect of this so-called wokeism, this so-called activism. Hey, we're gonna spread awareness. We're gonna let everybody know this is a problem. Telling you. Oh no, this is a problem. Don't. You couldn't take a shot of me. Anyway, before I get too carried away. But seriously, like, listen. And I'm trying not to have any dead air, but it's like, I'm trying not to say things. Because sometimes when you're passionate, when you care, you can say things that may not necessarily reflect how you really feel. But I'm really, really tired of this whole idea, this whole concept that we're just going to spread awareness about something. And because people are aware of it, things will get better. That has happened never. You spread awareness so people know about it, and then you come up with a plan on what you need to do about it. Usually, when you're spreading awareness about a problem, you should already have a solution in mind. That's the other part I don't get. Me spreading awareness. Okay, now we spread awareness. Now we need to figure out, like, and I know you guys have heard it. Hey, and we, you know, and we're gonna figure out. No, you should already had that figured out before you start coming to us about this problem. If there's a problem, let's say, hey, we out here starving. You know what I'm saying? A, B, C, and D. You know, and it ain't right. Kids is rib cages is showing. All right. Everybody drooling, dreaming about food. And we need to put an end to this. You better have a plan on how to get this goddamn food. It better not be, oh yeah, we need to figure out how we gonna fix this. Or we gonna and making the government do it is not a sufficient answer. If you're going to make the government do it, then you better have a plan on how you intend to get the government to act on it. It's not enough to say, we're going to make you do it. Okay, what's the plan there to make them do it? Because clearly, if it was something that they wanted to do, they would have already done it. So what are you gonna do to influence them to get done what you want to get done? That's what we got to talk about. So I'm gonna go ahead and end this here, family, because I know I've gone on a tangent. You guys know how I am. If you've been listening to me for any amount of time, you know I go on tangents because this is the stuff I care about. Like, and no matter how frustrated I get, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. So I'm gonna give you guys this solution. This is what we got to do. And because I didn't make the solutions clear, we need to challenge these precedents. We need to start talking with lawyers, like the same way that we were able to put together these statewide reparations plans and stuff like that. We need to do the same thing in regards to challenging the Supreme Court. All right, that has to be the thing. We need to be putting together some sort of document. All right. Or it's not really a document, but it's part and parcel because there's documents involved in this process, but that's what we need to do. All right. Maybe I'll come back on here and I'll tell you guys about how we can get that done. Okay. That'll be my homework for the family. But that needs to be in place. And then we go and spread awareness about challenging these Graham v. Connors, challenging this affirmative action decision. Not sitting around waiting to hear what Biden is going to say about a decision that they already knew that they was going to make weeks in advance, maybe even months in advance. We've really bought into the theater, family. The theater and the drum roll, the suspense. Oh, they got y'all hooked like a catfish at sun. Anyway, my point is, this. We have to be about the business of challenging. You have to be willing to sacrifice. You know what I'm saying? Another thing that I want to talk about, what's really going to help us, is that we need to come together in terms of, okay, so in our communities, in our cities, there's black businesses, right? There's people who have skills that are lawyers. You have a lot of different skills, right? What we need to do is that we need to throw a get together, all right? Several of these black businesses, go get some food, either cook it, have it catered, bring people in there. Oh, before you even do that though, black businesses need to have a conversation with each other on how they can improve each other. You know, how can we create either, you know, apprenticeships or kind of programs to where we can get the youth working, right? We have to start looking at our own community. Like, entrepreneurs, it's time for us to start going to these black colleges and finding this black talent. It's time for us to come together and put a package, put something together that's more appealing than what these other people can offer the same talent. And even if they do get that high level talent, that's fine. We have other talented individuals, but we need to start looking for that. So we got to go to these college campuses. We got to go to these high schools, especially high schools, junior high. Let's get these kids motivated for the type of world that we want to build, right? Let's get them talking about it. Let's get them engaged. So by the time they do get out of high school, they have a plan of, okay, I'm going to go here. Right, I'm going to get this education, and after I'm done getting this education, I'm going to come over here and start my career, start my family. That's powerful. That's powerful. Most of us don't have any such plan, or even when we do have that plan, it doesn't work out. You try to intern somewhere, it don't work out. You intern somewhere else, it don't work out. It's time for us to be. To become the opportunity that our people need. Instead of waiting on others to give us an opportunity, we need to start creating opportunities. I guess that's what I'm saying, right? So that's my solution. Creating more opportunities for the community. All right, that's what you gotta do. Even if you focus on your family first, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with elevating members of your family because they're still our people. And if your family's doing well, that puts them in position, but the philosophy has to be the same to pass it forward. There's not enough of that. It exists, but we need more of it. Okay? And once somebody creates that opportunity for you, you need to go about creating that opportunity for someone else. Okay? So let's say that you had a chance. Let's say that you were a carp for a sake of argument, carpenter, or we'll just go with tech. Let's go with tech. Let's say, you got your degree, right? You're a coder. You're trying to become a software developer. You just learned about, data structures. You know all about data structures and stuff like that. So you're able to work with somebody who's already been in the field, and you're getting that experience. And now you've made a bunch of money. You've got high up there. Well, it's either you create opportunity within that place that you're in, or you branch out and start creating opportunities. That's what it takes. 'Cause guess what? Revolution ain't convenient. And I know it's very, very easy once you start getting yours to be like, shit, I got mine. I don't want to lose this. I want to lose that. But never lose sight of what someone else had to sacrifice for you to be in the position that you're in today. Never lose sight of that. The fact that you get to go to college, the fact that you get to become Professor Emeritus, came at the sacrifice of someone else. Pay it forward. Pay it forward. Remember, someone had to sacrifice so you can get there. Because if you don't, we're never going to get out of the situation. And you're going to slowly watch, although you may have some money, you're going to watch the other people within your own family, within your own community, suffer because of that lack of opportunity that was afforded them. That's what you're going to watch. And that's not good. There's too many of us who slip through the cracks, forget about that simple concept of paying it forward, and now we have to watch the rest of our family struggle. Struggle financially, struggle here, struggle there, because again, no one afforded them the same opportunity that was afforded you. And stop getting on that high horse and say, well, I worked so hard and I did this and they just didn't. There's a lot of people out there that work hard. There's a lot of people out there that shit work probably work harder than you that just got the short end of the stick. It's really about the doors that open for you, right? It's not about, like, sometimes it just comes down to opportunity. Being at the right place at the right time. It truly is. It truly does. That's what I should say. It truly does. Just comes down to that simple thing. So, I mean, if we really want to start seeing some change, like that's part of it right there. Understand that when you're out for your own bag and only your own bag, that you're destined to be the only person in your family doing cool. You're gonna watch the other branches of your family fall off. It is what it is. It is what it is. A lot of y'all confused right now because y'all done worked so hard. You done put the two-parent family together. You've making an X amount of dollars, and only two out of the five kids turn out to be shit. And you're just like, I don't understand. Oh, we gave them every opportunity. We did? Oh, well, yeah, you might have given them every opportunity, but did somebody open up those doors for them to get that same opportunity that you got? That person that opened that door for you, was that same person there for them? And conversely, did you open any doors for anyone while you're looking for someone to give your own kids opportunities, to give your kids a chance? Did you have an opportunity to give someone a chance? Just things to think about. Just things to think about. But I'm gonna end it here, family. Peace, love, and light. I talk too much. I love y'all. Tech out.